This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
So I stepped out of the studio during the break,
Yeah. And
you look totally different.
I have different headphones. They're just broken headphones.
What? Turn my headphones up. I'm serious. Turn them up. Turn them up. Hold up. I'm serious. I can't hear out of this ear. Turn my headphones up.
Okay. Thanks for bringing attention to the headphones.
It's kind of stunned me because you're now
see,
wearing
the kind
white
of thing you don't have to bring attention
with
to.
With a red wire. It's just more colorful than ever before.
I'm saying you can't just put velvet in a and think they're nice headphones.
I don't think you need to bring attention to these things. You just have equipment issues.
Hold up, I can't hear out my left headphone. This is my left. Turn it up.
Okay. I didn't know what was going on.
That's all right.
Where did you get those?
Are they distracting?
They're very beautiful.
That is a shot right there. The headphones.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I feel like we need to be synchronized.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Holy cow, break up the Bulls, Mr. David. Break them up.
Good morning, Mully. Happy Tuesday. That was worth staying up for.
Yes.
The Bulls definitely deliver another surprise on this road trip, which they return back to Chicago, having won again against a Nuggets team that was without the Joker. Doesn't matter, does it? Because if you're the Bulls, you're playing as well as they've been playing. March Madness indeed.
Joker is a three-time MVP.
Yeah, I know.
And is probably on a Hall of Fame track.
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's already in the Hall of Fame. But
without a doubt. Without a doubt.
That was a great win. And Kobe White, he is not. I mean, Kobe White, I think he should have won the Most Improved Player Award last year. But they talked about that a little bit on the pregame. I think KC kind of said it well, and we'll talk to KC at 8:25, that, you know, he got so much better from the 23 to 24.
That was the leap.
Yes.
That was the leap. If he wins it this year, it's a make good for last year, but not winning
is,
it.
But this is what he's doing is emerging as a different level
player. He's going to be the Eastern Conference Player of the Month.
Oh, for sure. He's got, he won 2 weeks running.
He has ascended to the point where I think that it's not an exaggeration to say that he is an elite NBA scorer.
Oh, there's no doubt about
it. He had more than 35 points, I think, for the fourth game in a row. And he is just playing with a high level of confidence.
Oof.
And you feel confident watching him. Oh, that's from 30? No problem.
Yeah.
Nothing but net. And he has the ball in his hands. He's going to make the right decision. The thing that I think is interesting about Coby White, his evolution this year, I love the way that he's taking the ball to the basket.
I agree. He's in
that's
the paint
changed his
a
game.
Lot more.
Yeah.
Than ever, and he's successful a lot more than ever before in his career. You know, Coby, for when they drafted him, when he came, he's like a schoolboy legend in North Carolina, like the greatest scorer in high school history or something. When he, you know, and then he goes to North Carolina and he comes to the Bulls, but it's almost like he's now tapping into that in a way that he never could before.
I think you're right, because once a scorer, always a scorer, and he had to find his way and carve out his niche and develop his role over time through different iterations of the
yeah.
Bulls roster.
Yeah.
And Kendall Gill alluded to it yesterday, and you can't really underscore it enough. Without Zach LaVine, Coby White's a different player.
Yeah, it's incredible.
They may have a great friendship and they were terrific teammates, but his absence, Zach's absence, has allowed Coby White to step forward and really emerge as an elite scorer.
He's the first ever, he's the second ever Bull. He matches Mike by being player of the week 2 weeks running.
That's great company to keep.
Holy cow.
3,573 points in high school. Goodness sakes, I think that's more than John Shire.
That's unbelievable.
I think that's unbelievable, yes. 3,500 points in high school.
Yeah, I knew he was like a legendary scorer. But, you know, he always has been able to knock down a shot. But this is different level.
It's
you're
different
right.
level.
A lot of it is he's scoring from different levels of the floor.
And, you know, they do it so many different ways. Now, on Saturday night, when they beat the Lakers, we talked about and raved about the emergence of Matas Bezelis down the stretch, and he had 31 in the dunk on Luka. Last night down the stretch, I think Matas wasn't even in the game. And so they're getting good play from guys you don't expect it. Last night it was Dalen Terry. Dalen Terry wow. played last night, finally like a guy that looks like a first-round draft pick or looks like a guy that I know it's fleeting.
No, I used to think of him as a wasted draft pick.
Yeah.
No offense to anyone, but he was kind of the guy that held the camera and mugged for the camera when they were in Paris. And, you know, now here he is playing in the NBA.
Out of four from three-point land last night.
Wow.
And he had 14 points in 29 minutes. And really, defensively, he's athletic enough to make an impact. He's not afraid to go in and get a rebound here and there. So when they have these guys emerging, and, you know, Josh Giddey continues to just do things with the basketball, make good decisions, and he had 26 again, kind of quietly, because Coby kind of stole the thunder, but Josh Giddey goes for 26 and 9, and it's just another day at the office. So this is a fun team to watch right now.
He didn't get that quadruple-double.
No, he didn't.
Came a couple steals away, was it?
Vooch quietly has 13 points. He hit a big shot down the stretch, but they didn't need him to score 25. And they're sharing the basketball. They're doing a lot of things, and the ball is moving. And when you get a compliment from a coach like Mike Malone.
I totally agree. He said this pregame, and he said the same thing after. But let's hear what he has to say about the Bulls.
I thought we played hard, but we needed to play harder. Gave up 31 points in transition. You know, and that was the whole message all day long against arguably the best running team in the league, makes, misses, turnovers.
Wait a second. Did he just call the Bulls the best running team in the NBA?
He said it twice. He said it before the game and he said it after.
I think I saw a chart too. They're like third. I think they went third in pace right now. So,
yeah.
I mean, they're definitely moving.
Billy Donovan is having a coach of the year.
That can't be said enough. And when people ask you, well, what do you mean? You know, look at the record and look at his tenure, and he's not been the guy that you thought he would be coming from OKC. They changed their entire style of play this year. They adapted and they picked up the pace. They became a three-point shooting team and a 3-and-D team in one off season.
Too good to tank.
Too good to tank.
It's a ridiculous reality, but that is the truth.
That's the T-shirt.
Are we going to have to now like really take in what Marshall told you guys yesterday about just coming to the reality that this team's now, I mean, they're a playoff team and they're playing great, but now like not thinking about the tank and the lottery pick.
It's a ridiculous thing to bother with.
I think so, too.
They're right in the eighth seed. They're fighting. They could fight for the seventh seed, too.
If they were losing at the rate that they're winning, it would be a different conversation. But they have played themselves into the fact you have to, number one, take them seriously as a legit team that's going into the play-in round hot. And secondly, they have maybe reduced their percentages. They haven't eliminated them, though.
No.
We've been talking about this all year in a way that I think has always kind of bothered me. Because we're talking about difference in percentages. 10% when I might have been the best the Bulls could do to get in a position to draft Cooper Flagg. But now, as we sit here this morning, we have to do our daily check. They're tied for 10th with a 2.5% of getting the number one overall pick. Not good odds, 32-40. But
hey, they're fun to watch.
Would you rather be best running team in the league? Say they were the Toronto Raptors at 25-47, and 7th overall. They only have a 7.5% chance. I know that's 5%, but really, they're unlikely to get Cooper Flagg too.
Yeah, yeah.
That means they have a 92% chance of not getting him. So, do you sacrifice your integrity all season long for a chance to improve your chances 5% to get a guy who,
you know? And the reality is, a lot of teams will, and a lot of teams have,
and that's the way you do it. I get it.
It's the defended strategy of the tank. And I gotta say, I was listening to Marshall and Layla yesterday, and Marshall said, like, whatever you do, White Sox, don't be the worst team in the league, be better than one other team. Because everyone is picking them to be the worst team in the league. And as I was driving, I thought to myself, oh no. I actually kind of commented, you know, this year, you will get the number one overall pick if you are the worst team in the league.
If you're the Sox.
You didn't get it last year when you were the worst team in the league. So if everyone's picking you to be the worst team in the league, you go. Don't stop now, boys. Get that number one overall pick and get it through every round of the draft and pick correctly.
Since you brought it up, the difference to me between the White Sox fate and the Bulls quest – the White Sox do not have to intentionally tank.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't have
They're going to tank without trying.
They're going to they most likely will be the worst team in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Just by virtue of the talent that they don't have. The Bulls aren't that team, though.
Hey, the White Sox know it, and they're not pushing people to be in their starting lineup. Like Chase Meadroff is the latest guy who's going to start the season.
We'll get to that.
But my point is, it's
a good point.
They do not. They're not trying to put the best team on the field. They're not worried about that. They're worried about the future.
Yeah,
they've already made that decision.
It's unlikely that we're going to have a debate season long with the White Sox about their winning too often.
And you're right about that. Like that, when you see a team like Philadelphia just tank, they are too good a team to be that bad. But the Bulls, they are not bad enough to be the White Sox. Isn't that a weird thing
to say?
They're
not, because they have guys like Coby White, Josh Giddey, Vooch.
Yeah.
And I think that when you see the players that have come.
Matas seems to be a competitor.
Matas is a foundational piece in their mind.
Yes.
And they're treating him like that. And so you bring in guys at the trade deadline, and they have been integrated into this offense, and they have made this team better. That's coaching. So the Bulls have too much talent and too much good coaching, and they are. Put it on a T-shirt. Too good to tank. I like that. They should have too good to tank night at the UC.
Our buddy Patrick from Gage Park, burn the flag, crown the queen. The problem is, stop talking about that guy. We need him to fall.
it's not going to have any effect on where he's drafted the more or less we talk about him. You
well,
know that.
I really believe
you know
it does.
That. No, I know.
I think we're talking it into
You sound like existence. Dustin a little bit here. We're not going to put the whammy on him. He doesn't have the whammy on him because we say Derek Queen is a player the Bulls may
don't
want.
Say it. Yeah.
But you can't stop watching them. You listen to Chuck, they're having the time of their lives. It's the dog days of the NBA season.
They're loving life.
There's 10 games,
you know,
12 games left.
The other thing is, they're like really a good team. Like, did you see the video where they're talking by the pool? And
they like each other.
They're yelling down and somebody's standing off waiting to talk. You know, that is you said it. They like each other.
It's a young bunch.
They're a young bunch, and they're playing, and they're loving each other. It's like a crazy thing to see.
Yeah, it really is. Unexpected. I did not think March would be the month where the Bulls took off. I did not think this past road trip would be the one they return triumphant and full of, like, excitement. But here we are, and they get the day off. They return back on Thursday night, I believe, at the UC against the Lakers. Here comes LeBron and Luka. Not Bronny. Did you see last night?
Bronny doesn't travel, right?
Well, I don't think so. But did you see last night? Lakers lose again.
Of course.
Lakers lose again. But did you see LeBron? Bronny had 39 in the G League. Why?
That is a G League career high.
Why is Bronny in the G League and the Lakers losing? Put him in the lineup. Put him in the hall. Put him in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. Okay. I don't
know. Put him in the Hall of Fame. It's time to dance. It's time to dance. Sorry, the Bulls get me a little giddy. The Bulls get a little giddy, you know?
I'm getting out the dancing shoes.
You've reached a new level.
You talk about having fun, though. Those guys are having fun on the broadcast. It's a fun time to watch
the Bulls. I got to tell you, they're fun to watch. And I mean, I also think their station in life is inevitable, and there's no point in cheering for anything else. It's not going to happen.
It really
is. So just sit back and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Try to like the guys like they like each other.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And they are now 8-2 in their last 10. They won 3 in a row.
But don't talk about Derek.
Don't talk about it.
I didn't mention it.
It's not a secret.
I don't want anyone to know about them.
It won't mean anything to the outcome. They are controlling their own fate. They're definitely. You just wish it would have happened earlier in the season. Did you really feel like? And Dustin can go get some coffee now because I don't want. Did you really feel like Zach LaVine was that big of an impediment in this offense?
I mean, I didn't feel that way, but apparently so. I never felt that way. I thought he was a hardworking guy and he was doing well. But with DeMar and Zach out of the picture, it's almost like nature abhors a vacuum. So someone has to fill it. And I heard DeMar talk. He was asked about how well Kobe's doing with all these. And he was like, yeah, and he won Eastern Conference Player of the Year. He had just the one at that point. But he said he was proud of him, and he talked about
and Zach's like one of his best friends. He's tweeting on social media about how Kobe White has come into his own and all these things. And I just wonder, a guy that popular,
and DeMar's in touch with him too.
Yeah, but DeMar to a lesser degree because they got rid of DeMar last year. Because and everyone knows he's a master of the mid range, and at this stage of his career, you understood that. But with Zach LaVine being a 3-point shooter. Really willing teammate.
Yes.
He wasn't a selfish player.
No, he wasn't.
But he didn't quite fit. And I think his absence, as you say, has allowed these other guys to step forward. And I, as you know, am a big Zach fan.
Yes.
I think he was underappreciated in Chicago. But I have to acknowledge the fact that since he has been gone, they have thrived.
It is. Giddey is a significantly better player.
Okay.
And that's a really big
since
one.
Zach left because the ball's in his hands more?
Exactly. And Kobe has almost accepted this role as scorer. Someone's got to be.
Take the big shot.
It's incredible how he stepped up.
Yeah. I think that those two guys specifically.
Yes.
And I think what's exciting, if you're a Bulls fan and you allow yourself to be excited about these things, that's your backcourt next year. That's your backcourt moving forward. And Kobe White is, you know, what to do with his future is something we're going to talk about. But he's still young enough to say,
yeah.
Well, he's worth investing in. Josh Giddey, you're going to have an opportunity to invest in, lock up, and secure.
I got to tell you, the way they're playing and what I'm seeing, there's a lot of guys on that roster I want locked up and I want around here. And the problem is, I don't think they can bring them all.
I don't think they can either. When you look at their backcourt and they've got Io and Lonzo, what are they going to do about Trey Jones? Because he's been an impact player too.
Jonesy has been great.
Jonesy.
I don't know why we'd call him.
I call him TJ.
Yeah, that's good. That's probably more something he prefers. Jonesy just seems like the name you give a guy named Jones.
He doesn't play hockey, Molly.
I do love
a guy. Is that a hockey player?
I love a nickname that's longer than the name.
Yeah, because it defeats the purpose.
Exactly.
It's like, why would you say more when you're trying to say less?
Instead of saying Kane, you say Kaner.
Right.
Like you add like another syllable to his name.
Oh, big rumors in Detroit about Kaner. Big rumors in Detroit about Kaner. They might be going to free agency and have Chicago in the back of his mind, but we digress. We won't get into that yet. But yes, the Bulls delivered last night. If you stayed up to watch it, you were rewarded.
And I got to tell you, I have not watched very much of the women's basketball tournament, but I do occasionally turn on ESPN, so I'm informed about that tournament. Juju Watson going down with a knee. It's like, take the Cooper Flag injury and make it like a season ender. And that is the impact of that.
It's excruciating to watch. It's unfortunate for the tournament and for her.
It's so awful. She is the best player in college basketball. I'm talking about women's college basketball. I might be talking about the men's game too. That's how good she is. She's as fun to watch as any player in either sport. She's a lone entity in the women's game, and it really breaks my heart, the idea that she's going to be out like a full calendar year. She did her ACL. I don't know a lot about the difference between men and women. I understand that there's a difference, but have I been informed, is this accurate, that when you have an ACL on one knee, you're like twice as likely to need one on your other knee?
Those are the statistics.
Those are statistically what goes on. Because I watch a lot of women's soccer.
I don't want to sound like I want to play. I think that's the male athletes, at least. That's the number that is often associated with. But it doesn't look
promising. It's so she was about to be the leading. I think she was 54 points away from being the leading scorer at this point in her career of any woman in the history of the sport.
She
already passed Caitlin Clark.
It's
just like,
it's the equivalent of Cooper Flagg going down in the men's tournament.
It is exactly that.
It's the preeminent player.
If he didn't come back, you know,
generational player. All the things that we said last year about Caitlin Clark have been said about her, and now you see her go down last night. And
the best player in their game.
How do they
move
forward now?
Well, and I don't know how her team does anything. Their team is like plus 33 when she plays and negative when she does.
And then think about it, too. Even when she comes back, like it's probably still going to be like another year after she really gets back to herself. So that's
You're
another.
So
I think
right.
Paige had the same thing. Paige Buckley, she had the same injury. Now she's just getting back
into
form.
Here's the only problem. Here's the only bright spot, and this is what will have to carry her through her rehab. When she comes back, the hope will be that the women's game will be healthier than it ever has been, and as lucrative as it ever has been. And there's going to be a future in her sport still.
But the good news is she's got all these national – I see her all over the place.
Yeah.
So it's not like this is an athlete that gets injured in college and then never makes any money. It's nothing like
that. But she's 19 years
old. Like the old days. But I'm saying, it's like just bad for sports, period.
It is.
When the best athlete in your sport at your level – suffers a catastrophic injury, and to me, an ACL is.
It was so bad because just a couple days ago, we're laughing when we're seeing her sitting next to Jaden Daniels at
that
the
was
game.
So cute.
He was there. He was there at this game.
Was he at this
game?
Yes,
he was at this game too.
Did he carry her off the floor?
He wasn't the one that
saw carried. Wouldn't let her.
The mom probably would not allow that. Yes.
He tried to run out there and help her, and mom stood between them.
That was funny. She sat between them.
That was great.
The implication.
The look at her face was so cute.
You just feel terrible for her, for women's basketball fans, because the tournament is affected. life goes on. Connecticut won. Notre Dame's advanced. All the things about the programs that expect to play deep into the tournament.
They're in the Sweet 16.
But USC's, they're rocked, that program.
Oh, I mean, it's just awful.
Rattled.
I think the tournament's impacted.
No doubt about it.
I think ESPN is, they're going to be wearing armbands. I mean, what do they do? Oh, holy God.
Unfortunate.
Talk about.
Sox made some moves. Cubs got rocked. We have a lot to talk
about.
Yeah,
we got a great show. And it's up to us to kind of meet all of the content and how good it is. I feel a lot of pressure today.
Do you?
I just don't know how we are going to meet the moment. I'm going to lean heavily on just getting out of the way and letting David go because is too important a show. We need professionals.
Well, I'm going to need a little bit of lift up because I stayed up to watch the end of the Bulls game.
Okay.
I need a little
Did you watch the
end
of it?
Yes, I did. I got sucked in there, and I was just like, I can't believe he hit that. He hit another shot. He hit another one.
It was like,
oh my gosh.
When I left, it was beyond what I should have done, but it was like tied at 68. So I got into the third quarter, and then I was like, what are you doing? You are a worthless person to begin with. How will you do anything of value?
I was fascinated by Dalen Terry.
5 hours of sleep.
Dalen Terry just
that amuses
me. That's the kind of game that he has to have more often. But yeah, everyone came ready to play and win, and it was fun to watch.
I did not know about Bronny. I got to get caught up on the G League. Well, all right, we got the Pick 6 next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Pick 6 brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with the contractors from finishingchicago.com. How about Coby White? Repeating as the Eastern Conference Player of the Week for a second week running. He's the first Bull since Michael Jordan to go 2 weeks running. Does that add to his trade value, or do you believe he's a keeper the Bulls should build around? You can't pay everyone, but who should the team be building around?
I really like Coby White, and I really have enjoyed, what is it, his third straight 35-plus game, his fourth straight 30-plus game. I mean, who knows how good he can be. I would keep Coby. I would not trade him, and I would use him as a building block, and I think you have your backcourt right now for next year. And I don't know who your fourth is. I don't know who your fifth is, but I know that you got these two guys, and they gave Lonzo Ball a couple of years, so presumably he'll be back. I don't know that that's the three you want, but I think that that's the three they're definitely going to have. And they need to keep both those guys, and they need to build around that. And Matas is obviously a piece for the future. So they're all of a sudden, you got three of the five guys you need. And if McQueen falls and you get Moses Malone added in, I'm delighted and I'm really happy about it. So I would not be trading him. I would think his value, you get a lot more for him than you thought. But I think that you run the risk of him developing into something much better than you see here in Chicago. And then what? If you let a guy that good go.
That's a great point. You see him go through that door, and he's not coming back through it. And is what you're getting in return enough? Probably not. Do we know, and again, a good question for 825 with KC, you know, exactly where the Bulls are money-wise? I mean, they should be in okay shape. I mean, they got rid of Max Levine, so they don't have that max contract on their books anymore.
He can get away with that now. You won't interrupt them.
Yeah. David can't flip-flap back and forth on that one. First player since Michael Jordan. That's pretty crazy, right? I mean, 2 weeks running, Eastern Conference player. And in all honesty, if he hadn't gotten the award, didn't Josh Giddey make a case?
Yes.
Like, depending on exactly when
I thought it would be Giddey.
Right? Where your week is. Right. You know, I don't know if it's a is it a Monday through Sunday. You know, what is the week in the NBA? I mean, Josh Giddey's played unbelievable. So, answering the question, you should be building around Josh Giddey, Coby White, and Matas Buzelis. And then the rest of them, if you could get rid of them somehow, go ahead.
Not really. Not the get rid part. I think that the Bulls are evolving into this team that if they're looking at it, like AK, I think, is looking at it, they're looking at his – what's his motto? What did he say? 8 to 10 players. You want to build basically a team full of depth. You don't have a star. Kobe White, as good as he has become, is not that superstar yet. I don't think he's at that level. He's maybe just below it. He's become an elite scorer.
Right. I think he might be an all-star.
He's an all-star, but I don't think he's a superstar. And there's a subtle difference.
Sure there is.
I think that when you have an all-star, then he becomes a foundational piece. And I think you've got Kobe, you've got Matas, you've got Giddy, who you're going to invest in, and you've got your draft pick. There's your core four. There's your core four to build on. Then you add that to the mix. You got Zach Collins. You've got Jalen Smith, who's going to be here because of the contract that he signed last summer. And you've got Patrick Williams because you can't go on without him. You're not going to unload that contract. There's seven. So you look at then, who are you going to decide? Io, Lonzo, or Trey Jones? Which one of those two? Two out of those three are probably you're keeping.
I think Trey Jones is better than the other two.
I do too, because of the pace he plays at, and Billy trusts his basketball IQ. So there's like nine. We're talking about then Dalen Terry and Julian Phillips. They're not going to have as active as an offseason as I think that we anticipated a month ago. They got rid of Zach. They're rebuilding the roster. They're going to draft intelligently, you hope. And they're going to get somebody they can help integrate into the mix and be a core player moving forward. So the Bulls went from being somewhat boring running in place to now you start to wonder, what are they capable of doing if they can improve this much, this quickly? Can they ascend next year and take that next step? Keep Kobe White.
Next question, man.
What was your take on the Bulls game overall last night? Were you disappointed? No Joker? Are the Bulls at least fun to watch now? How about Mike Malone calling the Bulls?
Arguably the best running team in the league.
Your takeaways from last night's Bulls?
Love that. Love that, because what it does is it is the ultimate compliment from an NBA champion coach. That's respect. That's credibility that the Bulls didn't have before. What we're seeing is maybe what we should have expected. Billy Donovan does his best work in March. Can we agree on that? Because he did it in Florida. He's doing it in Chicago. And he has done as good of a job with this group. I don't want to exaggerate and say as any coach in the NBA, but it feels like he has done as good of a job as he could have with this group. This is not a group that has a lot of depth. It doesn't have a star. Billy Donovan changed the entire way they played. And they just beat the Lakers and the Nuggets in successive games on their home floors. I know the Lakers were rusty, and I know the Nuggets were without Joker. Big deal. It's the NBA. Teams play impaired every night. The Bulls don't have guys. The Bulls have made trades. They got a bunch of new players. Didn't even mention Kevin Herter when I'm going through the roster.
Yeah.
He's going to fit in somehow.
Yeah.
And he's a guy that you trust, and he came through again. So what we saw last night was what is making the Bulls fun to watch down the stretch. Team basketball, unselfish, playing just enough defense to be dangerous, and a coach that knows exactly how to get the most out of his roster.
Much more watchable than they were before. Before they traded a certain player that I'll try not to use his name as much as I have in the past. And Thursday night is like a remote control, like, workout. Okay, you got the Sweet 16.
Yes.
You got the Bulls, Lakers. You got Cubs baseball. And the rest of baseball's opening day.
Wow.
Getting to that later.
Domestic Open.
But, yes, they are fun to watch. And listen, Joker didn't play, but it's not like he just sat out that game. He's been out for quite a bit lately. So listen, you go out and you beat the team that the other team puts on the court. I'm not gonna give the Bulls like an asterisk because they beat the Nuggets without the Joker.
I think my take on the Bulls game last night and my take on, and I wasn't disappointed, no Joker. I thought it helped the Bulls. They are fun to watch. Mike Malone calling the Bulls the best-ranked team in the NBA is yet another tribute to the phenomenal job that Billy Donovan has done this year. The fact that he has converted that team to a different style of play that has caught the attention of a really good coach and other coaches. They've caught the attention of the league, but it's now forced them. We have to change the way we play because of them being the best running team in the NBA. And he's basically saying, we talked about it before the game, but we didn't have enough to change for their style of play, and they beat us. So I think it's a total feather in the cap type thing. I think it's it speaks volumes about how they have improved. And they've improved. They have improved since everything's gone awry. And you really thought they could have gone the other way. And maybe that was a planned idea. But, man, they've gotten better.
You thought when they traded Zach they were going the other way.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But they got too much back, and they're too good. They got too many decent players to just be successful.
Don't you remember that window of time a couple of days where we thought that they were going to waive Kevin Huerter, Trey Jones might not even get here, and Zach Collins, who was he? So now,
different feeling altogether.
Yeah.
That's another really good question.
Where are you at with word from manager Will Venable that Chase Meidroth will open the season at AAA Charlotte? What does that mean other than he can work on a double play with Colson Montgomery?
I don't get it. I understand you don't move guys before their time, but by all accounts, this is a guy who hasn't been hitting the ball great, but he's the kind of guy that he's a hitter. He sprays the ball all over the place. He's the kind of guy that I thought he was going to start at shortstop, to be honest with you, because I think with Montgomery not making the cut, and it was really related to him having injury, but he didn't do enough to make the team. That is the sad reality of where the White Sox are at. I think he comes up this year, and I think this guy comes up this year. It's really strange to me how bad they project to be, and I wonder what they're doing. I do not understand what their infield will look like now. They got some injuries. They got some things they're working through. They're still hunting for players. You know, Bruce told us that yesterday. There are guys that aren't even on their roster that could wind up starting for them. That's what they're doing. We can't name a starting lineup, and they open the season on Thursday. Okay, it's Tuesday. Like, that is in close proximity, and you would think they'd be farther along, but they're not.
And they don't want Nicky Lopez back.
They've already said that.
No, they're moving on.
Right, I'm just moving on. So that's not somebody that could be part of that mix that we don't even know exists. And how would the double play work? I mean, is one of them playing second base down in the minors?
I think Meidroth.
Meidroth is a second baseman.
Yes. I thought it was more of a shortstop.
Well,
he was a second baseman.
Thus the conundrum.
Was forced to play shortstop.
Well, it shows how I was confused. And now, Lenin Sosa is your opening day second baseman,
yes.
It looks like, right?
Yes,
according to Merck.
That yes.
That's
yep.
what it's looking like. Very confusing. I'm going to be, quote, a famous former White Sox employee and stay out of White Sox business.
Well, here's White Sox business. Lenin Sosa at second. It looks like Josh Rojas at short.
Is he healthy?
Miguel Vargas at third. Maybe not. If it's not, it's Jacob Amaya. One of those two probably. And it doesn't really matter.
Jacob Amaya really shouldn't
doesn't
be
doesn't really
the team.
Matter. Here's what I don't understand. And I'm flummoxed as well. They came into the spring, and Colson Montgomery was said to be the guy who is at shortstop, his job to lose. You know what he did? He lost it.
Yeah.
He got injured, and then he wasn't good. Here's Chase Meidroth steps in, who was a second baseman. He can play short, so they said. He was a sneaky good piece in that Grosche deal, and you know what they said about him? It was his job to lose. And you know what he did? He lost it. So we now have two of the White Sox top prospects who were given the chance to win the shortstop job. Neither one sees the opportunity. I don't know how you feel good about your player development if that is indeed the case. And if it isn't the case, why were we so excited at the beginning of spring training? Maybe Colson Montgomery is going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be a shortstop. I'm coming around to that idea. If it is, I don't know that he can stay healthy because he didn't in spring training. Meidroth, I thought a week ago he was going to start opening day. I don't know what to make of this plan, and I don't want to overreact because it's going to be a season full of developmental ups and downs. This is a down. When you're 0-for-2 with your shortstops of the future or your infielders of the future, I don't think things are going particularly well. So it's going to be a rather anonymous infield. It's going to be a revolving door on the roster. Did you see the Mariners? Did they release Mitch Haniger? Is that a guy that you would be on your list because he's got some
Well, I'm confused by that, David, because they released Brandon Drury because he's got an injury, even though he did very well and made the team. So now, I mean, are they going with older players?
I've been told the spring went well for the White Sox.
Yeah, they don't want to go with the young guys.
I'd like details.
I don't understand. We need help.
It's a hard question to answer.
In Monday's Cubs-Braves game, Ian Happ started at center field, Gage Workman in left field. Does that illustrate how versatile the Cubs are or how little outfield depth they actually have? And who's going to be the odd man out on the 26-man roster?
Well, Ian Happ in center field just tells you that Pete Crow Armstrong can't get hurt. And he can't struggle. And he can't slump. And he can't do a lot of things that guys entering their second full season at the majors typically are prone to do.
He's a huge piece of this.
He may be as important as anybody in that lineup because of the lack of depth behind him and what his stunted growth means to the overall picture. PCA has got to be on, and he's got to be on immediately. You can't flip a switch in June. He's got to start. Got to start and come in hot. So Ian Happ reminded you of that on Monday by playing center field. And Gage Workman playing left tells you that they're trying to get every way possible to keep him on the roster to have him play as many different positions.
That's it.
Left-handed power bats aren't easy to find. Guys who hit for average aren't either. You've got to keep Gage Workman on your roster, Chicago Cubs. Brujan, I know you traded Never Nervous Mervis for him, but it doesn't really matter now. Matt Mervis has made the Marlins. Brujan, if he's the odd man out, I'm not going to lament it the way I would if they don't have Gage Workman on the roster and they send him back to Detroit. That would be a mistake. Don't make that mistake.
If he's the odd man out, then he starts for the White Sox.
You know, Vidal Brujan, I don't understand. Again, another guy. Did he pinch run in Japan? Maybe
I blocked that out of my memory.
Gage Workman didn't do anything other than maybe order Domino's pizza. Supposedly somebody ordered Domino's pizza from the Cubs, something we should get into later when they were in Japan. They couldn't take any more Japanese food. They had to have a little taste of home.
I can relate to that, but let's talk about that later.
A little ranch on that pizza, David. Gage Workman should be on the team. You make a great point about PCA. Like, he can't struggle. But worst case, I mean, you could Ian Happ can't play center field, somebody else can play left. I mean, you can kind of supposedly hide Major League Baseball player in left field. Look at what the White Sox do with their left fielders. So again, if Gage Workman's not on this team and Vidal Brujan is, I would be very disappointed.
I think you're exactly right. I think that they're trying everything with Gage Workman. He's played all over the place. And it's because they want to keep his bat. He's a lefty power bat. He's had a great training camp. And obviously, as a Rule 5 guy, you can't send him to the minor leagues. So they got little choice there. And you're right. They have a roster decision to make between those guys. I think, to me, this is just an example of trying to convince themselves that Gage Workman can do everything at all positions. That's why you work them out there and you try it there. I really think PCA is one of the most important pieces on the team because, as we have talked about repeatedly, if he can continue to wreak havoc on the bases, he's your leadoff guy. He's got that profile.
Eventually, yes.
He fits into it. So if that eventually happens, it means he's having a hell of a year. And that would be a fun thing to see, because whenever that guy's on the bases, look out. It just if you're a pitcher, that would make you very nervous. And again, if you're hitting behind him, that would make you really a good RBI guy. I think his speed and his ability on the base paths they need to take advantage of. So, yeah, you need, and I mean, that's how it's supposed to be. You're supposed to have players that are so much better than everyone else that you need them on your team. And he's got that potential. And I don't think it's a question of how you get by without him. I think it's more a question of how good can he be and how much can he help you and can he move up in the order, et cetera. But these are fun things to think about. No one cares about the end of the roster until you are stuck without somebody.
Until you need them. That's
exactly right. So it's important stuff.
Wow. You know, it's a scary good question, right?
We'll talk to Bruce at 9 of the Cubs' next 24-21 against bona fide playoff contenders, the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the Padres, the Rangers, and the Phillies. They're 0-2 are the Cubs. Is there a realistic record they have to be after the next 24 to make playoffs a realistic pursuit?
It is a difficult schedule to open the season. And I think that even if they fall into a bigger hole than 0-2, they're going to be okay because they will come out of it. It's just the beginning of the season. But you can lose confidence if things don't go your way. I would hope that they can split that at bare minimum. You know, you hope they do better. The idea is to stack series wins together. So starting on Thursday, get the series win and then come back and get another one. That is the point, the object of the season. But I don't, unless they really fall into a hole, I don't think there's going to be a problem with the overall roster. I think they're gonna figure out a way to play their best, and I think we're gonna get good contributions from a lot of people. I think they're a good team.
No worse than two games under 500. They've got to be 500 or worst case scenario, two games under 500. One bit of good news, and maybe you guys saw this. I did not see it a lot happening over the weekend, but. The Diamondbacks announced that Corbin Burns.
They're going to miss him. Yeah, they're going to skip him.
You need to win. You got to win the game that Corbin Burns was supposed to pitch against you.
That's right? The good news, Dustin. The bad news is the Diamondbacks are loaded with that rotation.
Great, great pitching.
Zach Gallen is among the best in
Not
the National League,
Not great hitting,
too.
But great pitching.
Great pitching. Well, great. They are great hitting. I think they had the highest. They scored more runs than anybody in baseball last year, I believe. Need to check that out. Let's do some fact checking. Diamondbacks are for real. Cubs, there. You said that can't be worse than two games below 500. You mean the way they are now? They're 0-2.
They're in the worst case scenario.
This is a gauntlet of a schedule.
This is and the skipper doesn't want to hear it. Either.
The manager doesn't want to hear it. The manager doesn't want to talk about the tough schedule.
We should revisit that audio.
Or jet lag. Talk about neither. Speak neither one into existence. If you're the Cubs and you're looking at the schedule, 24 games, 21 against playoff contenders, you've got to go 13-11. You can't finish that first 24 games of the season and so your first 26 games and be worse than 13-13. If you are, you can adjust and recover.
Yes.
As Stoney likes to say, you can't win a pennant or a division in April, but you can lose it.
Yeah.
You can lose it. And you don't want to see the Cubs start 10-16. That would not be good or acceptable. That would create a little bit of panic and unrest. Starting here, I don't think it would be very fun to come in if they're 10-16. So I think you got to go 13-11 over those 24 games against a very good schedule, and I think the Cubs have the roster to do that.
It's a good question.
Over the weekend, Bears free agent tight end Mercedes Lewis expressed confidence in Caleb Williams and left the door open for a 20th NFL season.
You know, when you have a guy like Caleb and the ability that he has to get that ball out of his hand and throw off platform and make hard stuff look very easy. And if you're doing it in college and you've been able to get away with it in college, obviously the natural progression when you come into the league, you're going to try to do some of those things.
Are you going to play again?
Yeah.
Should the Bears be interested?
No, they shouldn't. No. Mercedes Lewis is a fine example of perseverance and fitness and an ode to athleticism, because if you are a guy that can last 20 years in the National Football League, you are a specimen. You are the rarest of athletes. Congratulations. Here's a gold watch. Thanks for the memories. I don't think you want him back. I don't think you can waste the roster spot, and I think it would be. Mercedes Lewis turns 41 years old in May. You know who turns 39 in May? Ben Johnson. He's older than the coach. I don't think you want him back. I know he's a leader. He also was part of that leadership council that maybe was a little bit part of the problem and not the solution early in the year when they were calling out Shane Waldron. And I know it worked out well because Shane Waldron needed to be called out, but I just don't know if you want to bring him back. Aren't you starting over with Ben Johnson? Isn't this a new day at Halas Hall? I respect everything he's accomplished. If they want to hire him into the front office or add him to the community relations staff, terrific. He could be your ambassador, Chicago Bears ambassador, Mercedes Lewis. But a guy that had two targets, and played in played in 17 games and had four targets last year is not worth keeping, and I just don't think he's part of the offense, and I don't think he should be.
He had more penalties than targets, which also means he had more penalties than catches. He was brought in to try to help block. How bad was the Bears blocking? Absolutely 100% no.
They love this guy, and it is confounding.
They do.
But they love like an old tight end. They really – who was the guy that was before him? I mean, they –
Ditka?
No, they love old tight ends, I'm saying.
I know.
Who flew the helicopter?
Oh, Jimmy Graham.
I'm just saying. I mean, how many
Robert Tunyon.
How many of those guys do you need? I mean, God bless them. I'm not picking on him.
Jimmy Graham has probably caught how many hundred passes in the NFL? And to you, he will always be the guy who flew the helicopter.
At least he caught some balls. I mean, Mercedes Lewis didn't catch any balls.
Didn't I clarify it enough that you named him?
Yes, you did.
So
okay, to me too, I guess.
To you too. Listen, get another offensive lineman. Keep drafting offensive linemen. Get stronger on the offensive line. You won't need a blocking tight end. That's all. He's a blocking tight end.
Jimmy Graham, 719 catches, 8,545 yards. And Moley's guy, he's just a pilot to you. He's a helicopter pilot.
Hey, with due respect, that's what he was when he got here.
That's true. That's true.
Okay?
Yes.
That was the most unique and interesting thing about him when he came to Chicago.
I think you're right.
I think get a tight end.
That's what you want to avoid. A guy who is a threat to do something when he's in the game. When Mercedes Lewis is in the game, you know he's staying in or they're running the ball.
He's not a guy you have to cover. You'd like to have a tight end they have to cover? You like your tight ends to be able to block and catch?
Draft a guy half his age, you'd be better off.
Get a younger version.
Yeah.
If he means that much.
Yeah, get somebody in his 30s.
Yeah, get someone younger than the coach. All right, we've got the extra point next. 312-644-67. We're going to get to your call soon, but I know a lot of people are getting anxious. We got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
We talked yesterday about the NCAA Sweet 16 coming from just four conferences this year, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, and Duke of the ACC. In every other year since the round was created back in 75, there have been at least seven conferences represented. With no Cinderella teams or bracket busters remaining, does that mean no more expansion for the NCAAs? Could that be an unintended consequence of super conferences, NIL, and the transfer portal era?
That's a good question, but I don't think it will limit or defray anybody from – I think – there's going to be momentum for expansion, and it will be driven by dollars, like everything in college sports is these days. I don't think the decrease in buzzer beaters or the diminishment of the tournament overall because of that is going to change the reality. They're probably going to go to 76 or whatever, however many teams they want to expand to, they will. And we're just going to have to live with it. This is the reality that we have to grudgingly accept. I would like to see them regulate the transfer portal. I'd like to see them regulate NIL. Maybe revenue sharing will do a little bit of that in terms of having a quasi-salary cap in college sports. They've got to do something to allow you guys strike a balance between player empowerment and abusing the system so it creates what we have now, which is essentially chaos. You've got teams preparing for Sweet 16 games, having to worry about players who have already entered the transfer portal. Look at Michigan. Scottie Pippen's son reportedly already has entered the transfer portal, and they're getting ready to play the biggest game of the season.
It's incredible.
That can't happen. And what happens is that's one example of what we're talking about with the lack of regulation. And when you have a lack of regulation to this degree, it makes the mid-majors that we used to celebrate at this week about, you know, how they're coming together and how they have such a tight, cohesive team because they've been together 2 or 3 years, the Loyolas of the world, the Valparaisos, the Butlers, the George Masons and VCUs. Now, those are quasi-junior colleges.
Yes.
They're developing talent for the major conferences, and so if you expand, you're going to get 15 teams from the SEC every year. You're going to get 15 teams from the Big Ten. You're going to get a lot of things that maybe are the unintended consequence of expanding the tournament. I don't like it, but it's something that we all have to brace for.
If his name was Scottie Porter, we wouldn't even be even saying one syllable about it. The guy hasn't played in the tournament yet.
And your point being?
So what if he's transferring? He doesn't. He's not barely. He's.
You're missing the point. No. You're so missing the point.
All right. Well, you could explain it to me. You could explain it to me. How about the Big East? Like the Big East, they need to get a team in. I mean, they can't even get in, let alone a MAC school or an Atlantic 10 school.
Okay.
And let's see what the ratings are, because we could say, oh, listen, we've had two buzzer beaters. Okay. Are we counting the first four or are we not counting the first four? Because we had a buzzer beater basically in the first four for Alabama State.
But you're really squeezing semantics here. You're sticking.
Well, which one is it, David? Which one is it?
There was one buzzer beater last weekend. We don't typically get one buzzer beater in the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
Let's see how the ratings.
If you're trying to argue that it's better because the TV ratings are up,
I would challenge that. Some people are saying that the tournament's dead because of the lack of Cinderella and the lack of
buzzer
beaters.
I'm not saying it's dead, but it's damaged. It's diminished. I'm not saying it's dead. I didn't say dead.
Didn't say you did. I said some.
Yeah, I like the idea of unintended consequences. So I think that all that we've seen here with the expansion of the super conferences, and I think that clearly the SEC had the best teams in the nation this year, and they are well represented among the final 16 teams. What do they have? 7 of the final 16 teams. Pretty extraordinary. And they have the greatest upset story. They have the greatest odds against team in Arkansas. Coached by John Calipari, where they put the player, they spent the fortune to put the team together, and they're doing well. And that is not a Cinderella.
Mm-mm.
And there isn't one in this tournament. And I think what you're saying is accurate. I think the teams that are wiped out here are the ones that have become, as you say, junior colleges. You know, Loyola has a kid on their roster. Jaden Dawson just scored a career-high 30-something points, and they won the second game in the NIT. That kid could be poached because he's a junior, and he could go somewhere. If you get Drew Valentine a job, maybe he will. Ditto Miles Rubin. They got this tall center. Kid can jump out of the gym. He's a great defensive player, and he blocks shots. And he's a sophomore in college. And I don't think the Ramblers are going to be able to come up with 450 to 400,000 to keep him from transferring.
It's playing out in real time in front of us.
He may get $1 million.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
It's exactly what we're talking about.
This is exactly the problem, and it's what it's it has damaged this tournament. This tournament is the first one that is pure NIL and pure portal, and you see these super teams that have been built through the portal, and you know it's just amazing that the portal is already open, and you see a kid from Michigan, regardless of his name, going into the portal. I think it would have been a story no matter what.
That's the point. Thank you. Dustin, it would have been a story. Dusty May, the coach of Michigan, has to worry about a player on his team, yes, on his roster, in his locker room, being unhappy enough to enter the transfer portal. That's something that a coach preparing for the biggest moment of his career should not have to worry about. And that's my point.
And they're playing Auburn. You see what I'm saying?
Yes.
It doesn't matter.
Worry about beating the trap.
He doesn't play.
You are so missing
the
point.
He hasn't played one minute in the tournament.
Then take him off the team. Like your response to that, your response should be to take him away from the group, because that's a huge distraction.
It's a distraction.
And it's going on.
It's a total distraction.
As they're getting ready to play Auburn.
If he's entering the transfer portal,
one of the best teams
and it's
in the
a
country.
Headline or not, he's complaining and grousing to teammates who are worried about beating Auburn's trap in defense, not worried about their buddy leaving town in a month.
It's a
distraction.
The only problem with the thing is that I got Michigan in the Final Four.
There we go.
And I mean, you read that story and you're going to spit something out.
It's not a self-interest in pointing that out.
His name was Scotty Porter. Nobody
would care. I'd be saying the same thing, Dustin Rhodes.
Wouldn't be a headline on the three-letter network or the four-letter network. You wouldn't even know about it.
Listen, Justin, people would know.
They would. People would know. And I can't believe you're using that as the crux to say that it's not a problem. It's a problem.
Give me a starter in the Sweet 16 that's talking about transferring. Now we got a story. Now we got a problem. A guy who hasn't played a minute in the NCAA tournament's transferring? Ooh, boy. Sound the alarms.
We got to get to a break, but we should continue talking about this. There's so much in college basketball that we have to talk about. And there's one extremely
let's talk about that when
absurd
we come back.
Story out there.
Well, Dustin's got me in a bad mood. Let's talk about that when we come back.
Mully and Haw on the Score.
When is it open, the portal? When? This Monday?
Don't look at me.
Welcome to my world. So Monday, we're really preparing for a game. And we're having individual meetings about, are you coming back? Or what do you, if they put their name in the portal, they probably don't have an option to come back. But, you care about the kids. At the end of the year, it's all about them. Whatever they choose. You want to go pro? Want to come back? You want to go somewhere else? It's their choice. And I've always been that way, but it's getting harder to be that way.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 of the Score. That's John Calipari of the Arkansas coach, the 10 seed, the lowest seed to make a run in the tournament. Mm-hmm. They've got to the Sweet 16. On Monday, he finds out the portal's open today.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. That's why these teams hire a general manager.
That's why they have to, though.
That is why they have
to. Because of the structure of the calendar. And yeah. You have players, and you don't want to pick on Scottie Pippen's son.
No.
Because he gets notoriety for being Scottie Pippen's son. And Justin Pippen entered the transfer portal for Michigan, which plays number one Auburn Friday night. So that brings attention to it.
Of course it does.
But to think that that's the only reason that attention is paid to this topic is naive. Because we heard one of the best coaches in college basketball have to deal with the same issue to a lesser degree. You've got to, you can't take any days off. You have divided attention and divided loyalty to this year's team and next year's team at the same time. That doesn't make for a good tournament.
He's saying before, with the portal now open, that means I got to talk to everyone. Are you coming back? Are you going pro? Are you going to be still on my team? Or are you going somewhere else? I think that's an extraordinary circumstance to have in the midst of the NCAA.
It diminishes tournament. Your tournament. We talk about what's wrong with the NCAA tournament and how one buzzer beater or two buzzer beaters since the tournament began a week ago tonight. When it did in Dayton, and that's when the tournament officially started, that I think that you look at all the issues. And yes, Justin Pippen drew a headline, but John Calipari spoke to the broader problem. The broader problem is every one of these 16 coaches that are still preparing for the biggest game of their season have to prepare for next season's roster change as well. They shouldn't have to do that. They should adjust the calendar.
If you expand the tournament, and I mean, all they want to do is expand because they want to give you television, they want to get everybody watching. I don't find the storylines as compelling with only four conferences represented. But I filled out a bracket, and I'm curious about it, and I feel like it's my duty to watch these games. But this hasn't been a tournament where you find this crazy underdog, you know, one of these Cinderella teams, or, you know, go on this extraordinary run. This is not the year. The tournament's different, and I think the idea that now coaches have to deal with the portal in the midst of it tells you this is a new thing. This is different. This is not the college basketball that your father watched.
The best story of the first weekend was the team manager from McNeese State,
who, by the way, is in the portal himself.
He's in the portal, too.
He's leaving.
Sign of the times yesterday. Aura. Jeff Goodman from Field of 68 reported that more than 500 players entered the transfer portal on the first day that it was open.
Wow.
That should be something that is not open until after the tournament is over. Last year, 1,425 had entered the portal midway through the open window. There's just going to be more and more and more. So Justin Pippen is the first name that we saw in a headline. It won't be the last. And to think that it's the only would be, I think, naive.
How many teams did they get? 14 teams. If you expand, what are you going to do? Put like 18 of their teams in the tournament? Why even have a conference tournament? Because that's called the NCAAs.
Well, you wouldn't need one.
Right.
You know why?
Ditto the Big
Television
10.
Money.
Well, that's
TV
what I'm saying.
Revenue.
And I know that that's the way it's headed.
Yeah.
But I don't enjoy it. I don't want to watch like teams with losing records because they're in a great conference go on a run. That's what we're talking
the
about.
Counter
that's the
to
new
that,
Cinderella.
The counter to that for the Dustins in the world are that you see a higher caliber of play when you see major conference versus major conference. Correct?
No, there's a difference. I would agree with what John Calipari is saying, but I think that's more because his focus needs to be on taking this group and helping them to hopefully advance to the Elite Eight and then the Final Four. My point is that a kid that hasn't played 1 minute in the NCAA tournament, I would hope he wants to transfer. Okay? You want to play. So, okay, but he's not disrupting Michigan. If he was such a big deal, then Dusty May should play him. So those are two different things. We didn't get to the point. The point, yes, it's an issue.
He's distracting Michigan.
No, he's not.
Yes,
he's not. He is not. If he's a distraction, then why is he on the bench?
He's a distraction because he is in the headlines for the wrong reason. He's an unhappy end-of-the-bench player that you don't need if you're Dusty May or any coach preparing for the number one team in the tournament.
Should the portal be open right now? No, but it has nothing to do with Scottie Pippen's kid, who, again, if he wasn't Scottie Pippen's kid, wouldn't even be talked
about. Both underscore a broader issue. The tournament is somewhat broken, and you don't have to.
Bro, what's broken about it? Because your St. Johnny's are out. Your bracket.
You
busted,
are so unfair
broken?
About that.
What do you
has
mean?
Nothing
what's,
to do
I
with
want you
my
to tell
bracket.
Me why the tournament is broken.
We just talked about it. We've
Does
been waiting for the last 20 minutes.
Was open?
No, because
I was recording my Blackhawks. Reading,
okay, good. I'm glad you missed your hockey, but pay attention to college basketball. The tournament is broken. There was one buzzer beater last in the
wait,
first
wait, one
weekend.
Or two.
There are. Okay, I'm saying two for effect because you think that the tournament doesn't start until Thursday. Whenever. There has not been as many buzzer beaters as there has been in previous years. There isn't a Cinderella story
no,
to be told.
There is the only long shot in the tournament is from the SEC. What the? It's not a long
John
shot.
John Calipari doesn't fit in Cinderella's slipper.
No,
that is
never.
It's a brand new team. They're five. They're all.
How
new
did they
players.
Put them together?
That's what we're dealing with right now. They did it. So they did it well. Should we congratulate them on doing it well? We thought St. John's did right. it so well, and they couldn't get to the second weekend.
Isn't the main thing, too, the NIL is just knocking out the mid-majors and messing
knocking
them up?
Knocking out the mid-majors.
Yes. Pretty much.
The
yes.
mid-majors
that
are gone.
That is another story.
But that's what
that's
we're talking
the same
about.
Story. It is the story.
That's the story.
That's what we're talking about.
We happen to like
the
mid-majors.
Yes. I love mid-majors.
And Dustin is Mr.
I said,
Flex on the
I
conference
said no
guy.
No Mac and no A-10, and the Big East couldn't even get involved.
Right.
I said mid-major. I think I was the only one who put mid-major in my answer.
Boy, so we're all agreeing? What the hell's going
doesn't
on?
Doesn't sound like it.
No, the tournament is not broken. It's not.
It's not
walking with a limp.
Not exactly clicking on all cylinders.
Yeah. It's unfair to the loyalists of the world, pal.
TV ratings, though.
In the
NIT? TV ratings.
Go Ramblers. All right. It's Mully and Haw, 312-644-6767, Chicago Sports Radio, 67 of the score.
Go Ramblers!